This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking.
It's Thursday, the 5th of June. This is your BizNews briefing. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. Our top story today comes from our partners at Bloomberg. US President Donald Trump has signed a proclamation that bans individuals from 12 countries from entering the US. Bloomberg's John Harney reports on the latest from Washington.
The president has announced a travel ban affecting a dozen countries around the world. Now, here he is speaking in the White House.
Very simply, we cannot have open migration from any country where we cannot safely and reliably vet and screen those who seek to enter the United States. That is why today I am signing a new executive order placing travel restrictions on countries including Yemen, Somalia, Haiti, Libya, and numerous others.
Let's get more with our Bloomberg editor, John Harney, joining us from Washington. John, we've seen travel bans before from Trump, but this sort of seemed to come a little bit out of the blue and catch a lot of people by surprise. So why now exactly?
Yeah, day and night here in Washington, this quickly captured a lot of attention and evoked memories, as you point out. This is it's harks back to the first travel ban, which caused a lot of chaos at the very beginning of his first administration in 2017. What this does, though, is broadens it. It includes, I believe, all the countries around the original ban, and expands them to countries like Chad, like Afghanistan, like the Republic of Congo. The rationale here is the attack in Boulder, Colorado last weekend on marchers who were trying to show support for the hostages in Gaza held by Hamas. The man who was suspected of carrying out this attack, according to the authorities, was Egyptian, and his visa ran out last year. Trump said that this showed that there were too many dangerous people in the country. Of course, Egypt itself was not on this list. But it's all part of his continued emphasis on immigration, on the border, which was a centerpiece of his presidential campaign in 2020 and 2016, but especially in 2024.
One of the key stories this week has been the redeployment of Floyd Shivambu to Parliament. That's from the position of Secretary General of the MK Party. The move comes after a disciplinary process stemming from an unauthorized trip to Malawi. That was in April, where Shivambu visited the church of self-proclaimed prophet and fugitive Shepherd Bushiri. The visit was deemed inconsistent with the MK Party's constitution. Shivambu, who joined the MKP from the EFF in August 2024, initially served as the party's national organizer. That was before being elevated to Secretary General in November. His redeployment to the National Assembly follows growing reports of tension between him and Duduzile Zuma Sambutla, daughter of former President Jacob Zuma. I've collated a couple of views on the story. First up, former South African President Jacob Zuma himself at a press conference briefing on the 3rd of June.
We thought it was important to talk about what has happened in terms of what people were saying. After our SG had visited Malawi, there were quite a number of things that came. We received a lot of letters. MJC, they were complaining. There were quite a number of letters that came, unhappy. They said a number of things. Because we were busy, this party, Kondwesi, was a very, very busy party. So we did not have time to leave what we were doing and jump to say what is happening. So we continued doing our work. They came, I think, almost three times worried about this. So we had to feel that if there are people in the country who feel not good about what has happened, without them knowing the details, it was important that we tell the country what has happened and why this, why do we take this decision? Because we have to respect the population that we are very serious to tell them that they must vote for us, all of them.
Floyd Shivambu has expressed gratitude and a renewed sense of duty, describing his redeployment to the National Assembly as a humbling responsibility. Shivambu has vowed to use the opportunity as a platform to strengthen the MK party that ahead of the 2026 local government elections and the 2029 general election. Here's Floyd at the same press briefing as Zuma.
We fully accept the new responsibility. We'll continue to play a role and build the organization towards the 2026 local government elections and towards the two-thirds majority victory in the 2029 general elections. Thank you very much, Comrade President. We really appreciate the role that you have given us and the redeployment, the confidence that you continue to show even when we falter in terms of some of the issues that we deal with at personal level. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Not surprisingly, the EFF's Julius Malema has expressed doubt that Shivambu's redeployment will in fact improve the MK party's performance in the National Assembly. Malema was also quick to dismiss any allegiance to his former deputy. Let's dip into that response on Daily Update's ZA YouTube platform.
I don't work with Floyd anyway. Parliament or soccer match or anything. I don't work with Floyd. I'm funing into a Floyd. So I'm not getting involved. I have queen here. So it's not our problem. We are in Parliament, we are working in Parliament, and that's it. If he comes to Parliament, he will find us rolling. The Parliament now is run by young boys. Young people are running that thing. And if he comes then thinks he can impose himself on them, they are already ready for him. So you can be rest assured he will not do anything that can undermine the superior logic of the EFF in that Parliament.
In another key story this week, South African Football Association President Danny Jordaan faced tough questions in Parliament, and that was with DA MP Liam Jacobs challenging his leadership record during a Sports Portfolio Committee session. The fiery exchange centered on Jordaan's accountability, especially concerning travel expenses and overall management of the association. There is mounting frustration with Jordaan's prolonged leadership. He has been accused of clinging to power, dodging accountability, and presiding over a stagnating football administration. Let's go into that portfolio committee session.
Who is actually holding you to account, sir?
Can I answer?
Who is holding you to account?
No, can I answer?
I'm asking who is holding you to account.
No, but I must explain to you.
Give Dr. Jordaan an opportunity to explain.
I had no business to go to Vietnam. You may know or you may not know that South Africa made a bid for hosting of the Women's World Cup. The CEO was with me. Tumi Dlamini was with me. Do you have their costs there? Do you have their flight ticket there? This is a campaign. It's a campaign. And you are part of it now. So we were in Vietnam. We made a presentation. We were lobbying to get the votes to host the Women's World Cup. Qatar, obviously, was a World Cup. And the World Cup is a 30-day period event. You can't pick major events that I've attended and put the costs. I don't travel to a World Cup every year or every day. World Cup is once every 4 years. And therefore, the cost, not just for me, for everyone else. Do you have other members who also were at the World Cup?
I'm asking you. You're not the one asks me in this meeting.
You see, the fact that 10 people travel to the World Cup, you take one and say, this is it. I'd like to travel on your planes and pay $20,000 to go wherever. It's not
real. Jefferson, if I may.
It's not real.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Back to President Trump, who is positioning a personal discussion with his Chinese counterpart, that as the key to preventing the world's largest economies from spiraling deeper into their trade and technology fight. Ashton Analytics founder Anna Ashton spoke on Bloomberg's The Asia Trade about the dynamics between the two superpowers.
Well, President Trump is positioning a personal discussion with China's leader Xi Jinping as the key to preventing the world's largest economies from spiraling deeper into their trade and technology fight. The White House said on Monday that a call could happen this week, but the lack of a Chinese response appears to be keeping the president awake at night. In a social media post after 2 a.m. Washington time, he said the Chinese president is very tough and proving hard to make a deal with. For more on this, let's get to Anna Ashton, founder of Ashton Analytics. Anna, feels like we've been waiting a long time for a phone call between Xi and Trump when it comes to trade. There doesn't seem to be any sense of urgency on the Chinese side to pick up the phone. What's the strategy here?
Thanks for having me, Paul. You know, we have been waiting a long time in the sense that the Trump administration has been dangling the prospect of a mano-a-mano meeting between Trump and Xi, or a call between the two of them, since really the beginning of this administration in January. But that's never materialized. And I think that at this point, the strategy is probably that the pressure that China is exerting on the U.S. seems to be working. The president seems a little bit desperate. So why not let him sweat it out a little bit longer, so that the leverage actually produces some sort of result that is good for China?
Yeah, obviously, the standoff isn't ideal for either country, but which economy can endure more pain at this point, the U.S. or China?
You know, it's hard to say which economy overall could endure more pain. I think you're right that this is bad for both economies, but politically, the automotive industry having work stoppages would be terrible for the Trump administration. This is a key constituency for Trump voters. So this isn't something that the president wants to see happen. It's something that he probably genuinely is rather desperate to prevent. And those work stoppages will happen if there aren't significantly more rare earths arriving in the United States from China in the near future.
In international company news, we heard from Meta CTO Andrew Bosworth, who spoke to Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco about why this year, 2025, could be pivotal for the development of the metaverse, highlighting unique opportunities emerging for engineers across the tech industry.
You wrote a memo that was circulated in late 2024, and it was published in 2025. You talked about this would be the year of greatness for Reality Labs, a time determining whether the metaverse would go down as the work of visionaries or a legendary misadventure. We're about halfway through the year. Where are you on that trade-off between the visionary outlook and the misadventurehood?
Yeah, history has its eyes on us, so to speak. I don't know if it will judge it at the end of this year. We'll judge at the end of the decade, but this does feel like the pivotal year. The thing that so many people get wrong is we tend to think of years as interchangeable. We're like, yep, every year. You just like turn the crank, you get one unit of work. It's all equivalent. And it may average out, but it is definitely not the case that every year is of equivalent opportunity or value. Some years in a decade are just worth more than other years for environmental reasons, for competitive reasons, for technological reasons. This we just, coming into this year, we knew we'd done a couple of interesting things. We'd broken through with the Ray-Ban Meta AI glasses. Yeah. It's a convergence of two different investments of ours coming together in a way that was not just exciting to consumers, it's exciting to our competitors. So suddenly we go from toiling in the relative obscurity to being very much in the world with a product that is very attractive to consumers and thus competitors. So your window, the clock has started on competition coming. And that just means that the progress we make in this year is of disproportionate value to any year before or after it closes. And so I really wanted to impress upon, especially some of my younger engineers, for whom they're like, oh yeah, cool, this is like another year in the career. This might be the biggest one. You might 5-6 years from now look back and be like, man, that was the year. I should have cranked hard on that year. And we've had years like that before. 2008 was a crazy year for us at Facebook, and there was the downturn, and there was also an opportunity that came with that. So we've had crazy years, and I look back, and they weren't all of equal value. And the amount of work I put into those special years had disproportionate impact on the ones that followed.
What do you need to see by the end of this year to help you answer that question to determine whether this was make and not break?
Yeah. The way this will be judged in the limit of time is always the market. The market is always the determining factor. Do people adopt the technology or do they not? And that is what ultimately will drive competitors and industries to standardize or formalize around those things. The market is actually, especially when it comes to hardware, a trailing indicator. So you look for early indicators. To some degree, you do have to have a level of confidence and taste in-house. This is something I learned from Sheryl Sandberg. You know, Sheryl used to always talk about most companies don't fail because they got beaten by a competitor. Most companies fail because they didn't execute their own plan correctly. And so what I try to do with the team is really focus us not so much on the competitive landscape as on are we executing to our standards? And so we have a set of ambitious plans for the year. Right now we're on track, but admittedly a lot of these plans are kind of back weighted, especially some of these research programs are yielding now. So what we'll know by the end of the year is whether we executed on our plan or not. What we'll know in 5 years' time is whether that was enough.
That brings us to the end of this BizNews briefing. We'll be back on Monday with more context on both the local and global front. Thanks, as always, for watching.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.